The trio circled around the Sylvaneth and made renewed assaults on them. They did not seek a bold strike as their fallen comrade had, but would sweep past and rake their claws against the dryads. The sharp talons tore long gashes in their bark and ugly cuts that brought blood sap bubbling up from their heartwood. The swarms of rats were thrown into panic each time the harpies came flying past them. In their desperation, the rodents climbed over each other, the added weight breaking the hold of those gripping the wall. Clumps of squeaking vermin dropped off and spun away into the chimney. The whipmaster, viewing the panic of its animals, tried to drive off the harpies. The ratkin's whip licked out, snaring one of the flyers around its leg. It tried to pull its catch down to the tunnel, but the harpy's strength was much greater. It dragged the ratman out from the passage and into the open air. The whipmaster clung to its whip and dangled off the creature's leg. With the ratkin's added weight, the harpy was unable to climb. It slowly descended, despite the frantic beating of its wings. Kyra soon lost track of the embattled enemies as they dropped from view. The remaining harpies circled away, ready for another dive. One bore a deep cut where Yanniher's claws had managed to rake it. The wounded harpy turned for Kyra and made ready to attack. Before the winged enemy could start its descent, though, there was a loud burbling from the molten river. A bubble, larger than any Kyra had seen before, swelled and burst. The spray of fiery embers spattered across the huge cavern. Several of them struck the harpy. The delicate membranes of the wing were pitted with smouldering holes. The creature screamed as it went careening down the chasm. It smacked against the wall before bouncing away again, its body a broken mass of bloodied rags. The mangled remnant was soon lost to the darkness of the pit. The last harpy lost heart for the battle after the loss of its brood. Hissing hatefully at the Sylvaneth, it swung away and retreated into the yawning mouth of a tunnel. Kyra looked downwards and saw that Nias and Yanniher were swatting away the rest of the vermin climbing up the walls. The dryads bled freely from their feet where the rats had caught them, scores of little bites in the comparatively soft fibres of their toe roots. Kyra dared to think they might make it to the tunnel when she saw a larger, rat-like face appear. It was another of the ratkin whipmasters, and like its vanished compatriot, it exerted a hideous command over the other vermin. Shrieking angrily, it used a spiked goad to force fresh streams of rats out onto the wall. "We cannot endure this," Nias cried. Kyra felt the desperate weariness in the dryad spirit.
"If we fall, the Thornwild falls with us," Yanniher shouted.
One of her clawed hands swept across the giant rats and sent a clutch of them pitching downwards. Kyra saw something more than the falling rats. There was a new light there, one that was far different from the glow of the magma river and the flickers that shone from some of the tunnels. This was a golden light, and as she watched, it grew larger, closer, bursting upwards with a bizarre series of hops. There was a familiarity to that light, and she did not dare to hope. As the gold light came still nearer, Kyra saw the pair of fey flickers that were rising with it.
"Eshia!" Kyra yelled to the dryads. "She is still alive!"
The other Sylvaneth added their own exclamations of jubilant relief at the news. They risked glances past the swarming vermin to spot the steadily advancing shape of their companion. Eshia climbed the wall in a peculiar fashion. The amber arm would essentially meld into the rock and fling the rest of her body upwards. The claws and roots of her other limbs would stab into the wall and she would retreat the squeamer's arm to repeat the process. Her progress was rapid. In a matter of minutes, she grew from the faint light Kyra had first spotted to a clearly distinguished dryad shape clutching the wall. It was not long before she was below the level of the passage the rats were swarming from. The ratkin was too fixated on the enemies above to notice the menace approaching from below. The first it was aware of its peril was when Ishia's acidic hand boiled over the ledge and incinerated a swathe of vermin. The ratkin turned to run, but the dryad was faster. Her fingers locked around its head and seared it down to the bone. With a backwards fling, she tossed the ratkin's carcass into the pit. The loss of the second whipmaster was too much for the giant rats. Those in the tunnel fled deeper into the mountain. The ones climbing the wall were thrown into such a panic that many of them did not need the weight of terrified vermin to make them lose their hold. Scores of the rats simply sprang away from the wall and threw themselves into the abyss.
"The way is clear for us,"
Nias cried out. She started to adjust her angle of descent, moving back to their initial goal.
"No," Ishia called. "We must go still lower. I have found a bridge the root cutter used to cross."
"How do you know?"
asked Kyra. The young dryad turned her head to her amber arm.
"Do not ask me how," she said. "But I do. Trust me."
Kyra felt coldness well up inside her. She did trust Ishia. That was not the problem. Could she trust whatever force was revealing these things to her? Could she trust Beastgrave? Chapter 12. Groth stood in the middle of the cavern and faced the tunnel down which the wolves had fled. The double-bladed Duardin axe was before him, its head resting on the ground and the beastman's hands leaning on the butt of the weapon. The herd chief's body was tense with expectation as he gazed into the dark passageway. On the ledges that ringed the cavern were Groth's followers. The beastkin were spread out to gain the best advantage over the foes he expected them to soon encounter. Togra, his quiver filled with grot arrows, was positioned in the middle of the chamber. Sorgas was off to the opposite side. The shaman had feasted on the hearts and brains of the dead wolves, sustenance he claimed would replenish his magic and his connection to the dark gods. Groth hoped the turnskin was speaking the truth, for he would need that spellcraft in the coming conflict. Near to the entrance, flanking the tunnel, Vulak and Frang were poised. The Ungor had a spear looted from the wolf riders, as well as the axe Groth had discarded at the Trogoth's cave. The beast hound had its claws and teeth, but, more importantly, its keen sense of smell. Frang would detect the enemy before anyone. Such warning as could be given would come from the swine-headed mutant. Time was the uncertainty in Groth's vision. The fight with the wolf riders and the cavern in which it occurred were clear enough. So too was the fray to come when enemies would emerge from the tunnel. He knew the nature of those enemies, though he had kept the knowledge from Sorgas and the others, lest they lose courage and go slinking off to safety. What he did not know was when the enemy would show itself, or how the battle would be resolved. There was no question that Groth would endure. He had seen the Cyclopean vault within which the god-beast lay entombed. He had seen himself, flushed with triumph, standing upon the monster's breast, shreds of its heart hanging from his fangs. He knew he would be victorious, at least so long as events remained true to those he had seen in the flames. Magic could interpret prophecies, but it could also change them. The shaman's power was both boon and bane. Unlike the rest of his followers, Sorgas did not obey out of submission and fear. He held to Groth's banner because it suited his own strange inclinations, arcane purposes the herd chief could neither understand nor anticipate. It was reckless to trust too greatly in things one did not understand. The visions had shown Groth that Sorgas would be here, loosing his spells upon their foes. Afterwards, in that black crypt, there had been only the chieftain. What had befallen his followers was unrevealed, leaving Groth to his own judgment and devices to weigh the benefit of Sorgas's powers against the shaman's threat. Groth turned back to the tunnel, his muscles shivering with anticipation. The battle was enough for now. He would meet the enemy head-on, and he would prevail. The further the war herd delved into Beastgrave, the more clarity he felt, the more confidence he had in his visions. He would not fall here. His destiny was elsewhere within the mountain. All the obstacles cast into his path only served to make him stronger, worthy of his victory in the god-beast's grave. A low snarl from Frang drew Groth's attention to the ledge where the beast-hound crouched. Its hackles were raised, its fur bristled. The white of fangs glistened as it growled. The creature was fixated on the tunnel, as alert as Groth had ever seen it. He took a deep breath, trying to draw the scent Frang had caught. It did not matter that he could smell nothing. He already knew what was coming. There was no need to warn the rest of his followers. All of them were watching for Frang's alarm. It was some minutes later when the first enemy emerged from the tunnel. Groth smelt the fear in the grot's scent. One of the wolf riders, absent of his steed, came creeping forwards. The greenskin had a vindictive expression on its sharp face. It actually smiled when it spotted the herd chief leaning on his axe. The grot motioned with one of its fingers, as though slitting a throat. Groth's lips curled back, displaying his fangs. He felt gratified when the grot lost its grin and anxiously darted a look over its shoulder. It babbled something in its shrill voice. Before it could run off, Togra returned one of the grot arrows to the wolf rider. The feathered shaft struck it between the shoulders, the impact spinning the greenskin around. It fumbled at the barbed arrowhead protruding from its chest and sank to its knees. The next instant, the grot was crushed against the floor. Two massive creatures came bounding into the cavern. Nearly twice as large as the wolves, they were sleek and powerful in build, every inch of rippling muscles and corded sinew designed for speed and strength. The long bodies were covered in white fur, dappled with black spots. The four powerful legs ended in broad feet with heavy pads. A striped tail flicked behind the charging animals. Ahead of the hunched shoulders, each had a leonine head, long tufts of black fur stretching away from the ears, and sword-like tusks jutting from each cat's lower jaw. The tigers charged over the dying wolf rider and rushed for Groth. Intent on the prey they could see, their feline caution diminished by the smell of fresh blood, the cats failed to detect the ambush that waited for them. From the ledge, Frang leapt upon one animal. The beast hound's claws ripped into the cat's hide while its swinish jaws snapped to the creature's neck. The tiger tried to whip around and sink its fangs into its attacker, but all it managed to do was lose its balance and crash to the floor. Cat and beast hound were soon a blur of snarling bodies rolling across the floor, each trying to gain the advantage that would bring swift death to its opponent. The second tiger was hit in its side by one of Togra's arrows. Vulak cast his spear at the cat, but the animal turned aside and the implement clattered against the cavern floor. Spinning around, it sprang at the ledge he was standing on. The tiger's jump was short, but the sharp claws hidden in its toes found purchase on the wall. Growling with fury, the cat climbed after the Ungor. Another arrow from Togra jounced off the tiger's shoulder, deflected by the thick bones beneath its fur. Groth made no motion to enter the fray. His followers would have to deal with the tigers. He would have enough work for his axe when their master entered the fight. A deafening shout boomed from the tunnel. The floor shivered as a huge weight ploughed through the darkness. The rank odour of the tiger's master was thick with the smell of death and blood, of offal and butchery. When she emerged into the light, she presented an appearance that equaled the horrid scent. Nearly as tall as the Trogoth, the ogre huntress had a greater resemblance to humans in her shape. Massive in stature, her heavily built frame was draped in the rough hides of bears and mammoths. A brazier fashioned from ox skulls circled her chest, while a gut plate made from the bull-like head of a bovigor covered her prodigious belly. A crude cloak cut from a gargant's scalp hung across her back. The ogre glanced at the embattled tigers, but settled upon the defiant image of Groth leaning upon his axe. She bellowed in her thunderous voice. There was a huge stone club clenched in her fist, steel studs projecting from its sides. The huntress let this weapon drop and tore a lance-like spear from a sheath on her back. Holding it overhand, she aimed at the herd chief. Groth called out a command to Sorgas.
Ogre, throw spear! Sorgas, throw spell!
The next instant, the immense spear was thrown across the cavern by the huntress, flying straight for Groth's chest. Sorgas heard Groth's shout. He saw the enormous spear speeding for the chieftain. For an instant, the thought flashed through his mind to let the ogre's attack succeed. The spear had been cast with such force that it could have pierced the armor of a dragon. Groth would be spitted like a shank of man flesh when it connected. The shaman let the temptation pass. He was still uncertain if Groth was essential to wresting the god beast's power from the mountain. Without the confidence to do without him, Sorgas was compelled to safeguard the herd chief. Sorgas raised his bray staff and called upon the sorceries of chaos. His breath turned cold as his body channeled the magic of his spell prayer. A flare of energy rocketed from the head of the staff as he held it towards the flying spear. The weapon was encompassed in purple flames that consumed it so rapidly that when it reached Groth, it was no more than a charred image, a shadow that collapsed into ash when it hit the gore. The ogre shook her head in disbelief when the spear was disintegrated. Groth seized upon her shock. He lifted his axe and charged the huntress before she could pull a second spear from the sheath on her back. She recovered her senses enough to grab her club and meet the herd chief's attack. The cavern echoed with the clamorous impact of the Dawadin axe smacking against the stone club. The ogre staggered back a pace from the jarring impact. Groth was knocked away as though he had hit a solid wall.
"Your arrogance will be your undoing," Sorgas hissed, as Groth rushed at the huntress a second time. Whatever the chieftain thought he knew about his vision, there was one rule all practitioners of magic soon appreciated about prophecy. The gods did not suffer those who tempted the inevitability of their future. Sorgas hurried to conjure another spell. He turned his braystaff towards Groth. The energy he evoked coursed into the goat-headed champion. There was no visible change in the herd chief, but he was changed just the same. For a brief moment in time, his strength was augmented by sorcery. Ogres were mighty and brawn, but slow in their reactions. The huntress was no exception to this aspect of her kind. Groth returned to the attack before she decided to adjust her own tactics. When he lunged at her with his axe, she met the assault with a swipe of her club. Sorgas focused on the fight and maintained the energies that coursed through Groth's muscles. There was a far different reaction when the Dawadin axe struck the stone club this time. A loud crack rang through the chamber as the club was split. Fragments of the broken weapon pelted the walls and bounced from the roof. The ogre continued with her swing. The half of the club that retained its shape slammed into Groth. The chieftain was sent sprawling, the double axe knocked from his grasp. Pieces of the shattered club pattered across the floor. The huntress stared at the truncated remnants of her weapon, little more than the grip she held in her thick fingers. Grunting in annoyance, she threw the remains away and reached to her quiver for another massive spear. "Get up, you fool!"
Sorgas shouted at Groth. The strengthening energies were all that had preserved the herd chief from serious harm when the stone club smacked into him. Sorgas could not maintain that spell while he diverted his concentration to new magic. Groth would have to fend for himself for a few deadly seconds. The ogre did not cast her spear at the fallen beast man, but took a few lumbering steps towards him. Gripping the spear in both massive hands, she stabbed the weapon down at Groth and tried to pin him to the floor. At the last possible moment, he rolled aside, letting the stone tip of the weapon strike up sparks as it scraped across the ground. Sorgas waved the bray staff overhead, spinning it in a wide circle before pointing it at the huntress. The ogre was ready to take another stab as Groth crawled away from her. The spear in her hands responded to the shaman's spell. The wooden shaft glowed with heat and scorched her fingers. Bellowing in pain and surprise, the ogre dropped the weapon and turned towards the ledge where Sorgas stood. What primitive instinct directed the ogre's attention to the source of the spell, Sorgas did not know. He was confident that he was safe from retaliation.
"What are you going to do about it?"
he taunted the bellowing huntress. The answer came as quick as it was unexpected. The ogre's huge maw was open, her bellow growing more enraged with each heartbeat. More than simple frustration was in that roar. Sorgas felt the air around him grow chill. Before he could conjure a defensive barrier, frost formed on his fur, and he heard the creaking groan of his staff as ice burrowed into its cracks. The biting cold was such that concentration was impossible. The blood slowed in his veins, and there was no magic he could evoke to save himself.
"Help me,"
Sorgas brayed through shivering teeth. He was uncertain if his appeal was for mortal or divine ears. In his distress, rescue from any quarter would be welcomed.
"Sorgas belong Groth!"
The fierce cry rang out as Groth charged the ogre. The Duardin axe slashed deep into her arm and drew a great gout of blood. The icy bellow of the huntress vanished in a snarl of pain. She rounded on Groth, kicking out with an enormous boot and delivering a strike that would have shattered a lesser warrior. The herd chief replied in kind and chopped toes from the ogre's foot. The shaman fought to recover from the effects of the frozen breath. He struggled through his shivering agonies to conjure an inner flame that would dissipate the vicious frost. While he recovered, he could only watch the battle raging across the cavern. Frang and one of the tigers scrabbled across the floor, claws and teeth ripping into each other. The second tiger had pursued Vulak up to a ledge near the ceiling. The Ungor was managing to keep the cat at bay with swipes of his axe. Togra continued to loose arrows into the animal with varying results. Some of the missiles went wide, others failed to pierce the tiger's thick hide. Four had struck true, their feathered shafts embedded in the creature's body. The battlers backed away from one another, glowering with pure hate. A brief respite before they returned to the fray. Groth clenched his axe tight, his body tensed for a burst of violent action. A change came upon the herd chief. The hate vanished from his eyes, and in its place there was an expression of intense surprise. Groth was not looking at the ogre huntress, but past her, at something back down the passage through which the beastkin had entered the cavern. Sorgas turned his head and looked for what had provoked such a reaction from Groth. Striding out from the passage was a group of strange wooden creatures cast in the roughest of human shape, tree fiends, such as the war herd had fought when trying to penetrate certain taboo forests. Sorgas did not know how or why these creatures were inside Beastgrave, but there was one thing he was certain of. From Groth's reaction, the appearance of these tree fiends was something his prophetic vision had not warned him to expect. The sounds of battle rang down into the darkened tunnel. Kyra indicated to the other Sylvaneth to be cautious. All of them sensed the presence of growing things nearby, life of root and stem. If they were so near to the surface, it might mean there was another entrance into Beastgrave here. Huntsmen might have found their way into the mountain to avenge their witch doctor, or some other malefic force might have taken up pursuit of the rootcutter and the abominable relic he sought. Kyra wanted to be certain what was ahead of them before they rushed into some new conflict. She discerned a familiar voice shouting from the turmoil of battle.
"That was Groth," Kyra told the others. "He sounds injured," Nias said.
The concern in the dryad's voice was genuine.
"If he dies, we may never find the god-beast."
"Unless what is ahead of us is the god-beast's tomb,"
Yania suggested. Kyra considered that reasoning, but rejected it. There was too much at risk if they were wrong.
"We have to intercede and make sure Groth lives." "There could be another way,"
Ishia said. She pressed her amber hand to the wall of the tunnel.
"If I try hard enough, if I put my spirit into sympathy with the mountain, perhaps I can find the way."
A shiver rippled through Kyra's branches just hearing the idea. Places had their own presence, some strong and undeniable, others soft and barely felt. The presence around Beastgrave was as powerful as anything she had ever known, greater even than the wild woods. It was also more malignant.
"The danger is too great," she said. "You would expose yourself to great risk for something we could not trust."
"Ishia found the Twistflesh's trail after we lost it,"
Yania said.
"There was no choice," Kyra stated. "Now there is."
Her bark darkened as she willed her body into an armoured martial aspect.
"We will use Groth to guide us, not forces we do not understand."
The discussion was ended. Following the branch wraith's lead, the dryads hardened their trunks and lengthened their claws. The hollows of their faces warped into gnarled, fearsome visages, war masks to strike fear into their foes. They strode boldly down the tunnel towards the fighting and emerged into a cavern with a high roof. Masses of roots dangled from the ceiling, and in spots, narrow slivers of daylight streamed downwards. Heaps of thick, dark soil lay strewn about the chamber, and the walls were characterized by shelf-like ledges. Kyra drew in the details of the cavern, then her attention focused on the battle raging before her. A white panther-like animal was trying to reach a small Twistflesh with an axe high on one of the ledges, while another Twistflesh loosed arrows into it from across the chamber. On the floor, tumbling about the corpses of grots and wolves, were another of the panthers and the many-legged mutant they had trailed from the Thornwild. Of immediate interest to the Sylvaneth were the two combatants closest to them, one of the gigantic, quick-blooded creatures Kyra knew as Copse Breakers, and her enemy, the goat-headed Groth himself. The hulking huntress turned, startled by the appearance of the Sylvaneth. Her powerful arm drew back and cast the stone-tipped spear she held. The weapon flew through the cavern and smashed into Kyra's body. Such was the hideous power of the ogre's strength that despite the thickened bark that covered her body, the branch-wraith was pierced by the spear. It struck with a sickening crunch, splinters of wood spraying away from the wound as it punched into the heartwood. The stone tip emerged from her back with several inches of the haft behind it.
"Kyra!"
Ishia yelled. She rushed to the stricken branch-wraith and tried to support her reeling frame with her one good arm. Yanir uttered a groaning rumble that shuddered across the cavern. She charged for the huntress, slashing at the ogre with her claws before she could drag another spear from the quiver on her back. The thorny talons tore through the hides she wore and ripped into the copse breaker's flesh. Bloody ribbons of skin clung to her claws as Yanir raked them across the ogre's face and scratched deep furrows in the brutal features. The huntress howled in pain and wrapped her brawny arms around the dryad. A creaking groan sounded from Yanir as her foe tried to crush her in a bear hug. Nias moved in to help Yanir, but before she could reach the ogre, the tiger on the ledge sprang at her. The animal's claws cut across the dryad's body as it struck, digging long scratches into her side. Landing behind Nias, the cat quickly circled around her, hissing and spitting as it put itself between the dryad and its mistress. She lashed out at the tiger, her claws ripping fresh injuries in its arrow-pierced hide. It snarled and spun as she struck, sinking its long fangs into her arm. Wood splintered under the powerful bite, and Nias felt an icy cold pulsating from the cat's jaws, a cold that caused crystals of frost to crackle around her wound. She brought her other hand against the tiger's neck and tried to pull the animal off, but the more she tugged at it, the deeper it clenched its fangs.
"Get Groth!"
Kyra cried out as she wilted against Ashir. Blood sap was spurting from her wound, pain throbbing through her being. But foremost in her thoughts was fear, fear that the root cutter would escape them and reach the terrible prize he sought. Ishia laid Kyra against the ground. The young dryad rushed towards Groth. The beast man stood with his axe at the ready, but had made no effort to interfere with the clash of Sylvaneth and Ogor. Perhaps he intended to wait and fight the winner. Ishia was going to change that plan. Groth turned to meet Ishia's charge. He lifted his double-headed axe in both hands and ran towards her. Before he could come within reach, Ishia's amber arm shot out, its acidic touch wrapping about the head of the axe. The weapon sizzled under that grip, steam bubbling up into the air. The beastman brayed in alarm and threw his weapon aside. He tried to brush away the drops of molten metal that had fallen onto his hands.
"Alive!" Kyra called to Ishia. "We need him alive!"
Before entering Beastgrave, the young dryad had been reluctant to kill anything. But now she was not so certain that the mountain's ferocity had not set roots in Ishia's essence. It was perhaps this reminder that caused Ishia to draw back her amber arm and try to get closer to Groth. Kyra suddenly sensed powerful magic at work. She turned her gaze up to the ledges above the cavern. For the first time she noticed a cloaked twist flesh with a lupine head. Dark energy swirled around him as he conjured his spell.
"The twist flesh sorcerer!"
she shouted in warning to Ishia and the others. It was all she could do for the moment. The ogor spear that transfixed her made any deeper concentration impossible. She could only watch in disgust as the wolf-headed shaman bit off his own finger. Black blood sprayed from the shaman's wound, but it did not remain blood for long. It assumed a thick, smoky quality. Instead of falling to the floor, it drifted through the air. Quickly, it took a form, a shape, like that of some demonic bull. Only the head and forequarters of the animal assumed any real definition, but those were enough. At the shaman's gesture, the black apparition flew across the cavern. One of the soil heaps burst apart as the spell swept through it, cast aside as though an avalanche had struck it. The bull barreled into its true target. Ishia was smashed by the spell, hurled across the chamber as though smacked by the tail of a dragon. Her body spun through the air and sped straight for the opposite wall. There was a loud crack as the dryad struck. She dropped to the ground and remained unmoving. Absolute desperation seized Kyra. She felt the twisted presence of Beastgrave's forests just above the roof of the cavern, a source of power she loathed to open herself to, but the only resource the branch wraith had left to draw upon. She thought of the Thornwild and all that depended upon their success in stopping Groth and destroying the godbeast's heart. Whatever sacrifice she made, it was a small price to pay. The glow in Kyra's eyes flickered as she reached out with her essence. Her spirit flowed up into the roots hanging from the ceiling and into the trees they fed. She allowed some of their hungry presence to seep back into her, lending her the energy she needed to block out her pain and focus upon her magic. At her command, the roots swayed and reached down in ropey tendrils. Her control over them was sluggish at first. When she directed the coils against the twist flesh sorcerer, The cloaked villain was able to avoid them and leap down to the cavern floor. The smaller beastkin hurried to follow his example, clambering down from their perches to escape the writhing roots. Kyra raised her hand and pointed towards Groth. The beastman was ensnared by a spiral of constricting roots and lifted off the floor. Savage delight throbbed through her mind as she found the enemy in her grip. She could crush him, like a berry, watch his corrupt blood seep into the soil. She could rend his body to gory fragments and scatter them through the vastness of Beast Grave. Not a speck of the chieftain would be left intact. The violent desires flared through Kyra, shivering to the deepest parts of her essence. Already the roots were tightening, ravaging Groth's body. Blood bubbled from his mouth as he tried to scream with such breath as was still in his lungs. Panic seized the branch wraith. They still needed Groth alive to find the crypt. Only then could they ensure the safety of the Thornwild. Horrified by the passions goading her to destroy Groth, Kyra focused all her will against the aroused bloodlust of the roots. She was unable to mitigate their violence, so she forced them to release the herd chief. He slopped to the ground, gasping for air. The other twist flesh hurried to him. They lifted him from the floor and carried him away to the tunnel on the other side of the cavern. The swine-headed beast hound stopped worrying at the throat of the tiger it had killed to follow the rest of the retreating war herd. Kyra felt panic again as the twist flesh entered the darkened tunnel. They could not lose the root cutter again, not now. Not when he might be close to his goal. The turmoil of her agony reached out and connected to the essences of the dryads. "We cannot fail," she told them, "but to succeed will cost us dearly." The dryads understood her meaning. Kyra felt their consent as she let her magic flow into them, magic rife with the vicious taint of Beastgrave's forests. New strength pulsed into the dryads, invigorating their savaged bodies and fatigued spirits. Nias stabbed her claw into one of the tiger's arrow wounds and sent an extension of her talon tearing deep into the animal's flesh. The cat opened its jaws in an agonized yowl and collapsed at her feet. Yanir used her bolstered power to break free of the ogre's grip by snapping one of the copse breaker's arms, cracking the thick limb as though it were a brittle branch. The huntress stumbled back, gawping at the havoc wrought against her. Yanir did not relent in her attack. She seized the ogre's face and savagely tore her lower jaw free. An anguished gurgle was the only sound the ogre made before she crashed to the ground. Kyra rose to her feet. She was appalled by the brutal delight she sensed in all of them. Even Yanir had never taken such pleasure from killing. She hurriedly tried to shut off the flow of energy between herself and the forest. More than before, she found the process arduous. It was an ordeal for which she was not prepared. It was more than the resistance from Beastgrave's forest. It was her own resistance that confounded her. Whatever part of her wanted to remain pure, it was not equal to the part that wanted to share the mountain's hunger. Dimly, Kyra realized that Ishia was approaching her. The young dryad's trunk was split, cracked by her brutal impact with the wall. She moved slowly, but with each step, her gait was less wobbly. Kyra felt the sympathy in Ishia's essence and a kind of anxious regret. As the dryad came closer, she began to speak.
"Pain will block the flow," Ishia said.
"Do it," Kyra told her.
Ishia reached for the spear embedded in Kyra's body. The invigorating flow of magic had caused the wound to close. The dryad opened it again when she forced the spear all the way through. Kyra's essence screamed in torment as the spear was forced through her. But she retained enough concentration to take advantage of the agony. The connection with the forest was disrupted, and while it was broken, she was able to close it off, not entirely, not completely, for there was within each of them a residue of the mountain's savagery.
Even when we have found the crypt and destroyed Groth and the god beast, we will be unfit to return to the Thornwild,
Kyra said.
This place is inside us. We cannot bring it away into the Wildwood.
Nias and Yanir bowed their heads in agreement.
The root cutter had to be stopped, Nias said, whatever the price.
So long as we succeed, we will be content,
Yanir added.
To guard the Thornwild and punish those who trespass within has always been my purpose.
Kyra gestured to the tunnel.
Nias, pick up their trail. They may make it more difficult for you now that they know they're being followed.
I will not lose them,
Nias vowed.
No,
Kyra said.
Whatever we must do, we will keep after the root cutter to the very end.
Chapter 13. Groth drew great ragged breaths into his lungs. Even though he knew he was free of the constricting roots, his body refused to accept the reality. His skin felt tight against his bones, his muscles constrained so that every effort to move was an act of will. Only one thing gave Groth any sense of comfort. The tunnel down which Togra and Vulak were carrying him felt familiar. The strangely corroded texture of the rock walls, the toppled plinths that sometimes lay across the floor, these were things that evoked his vision. That alone caused his heart to stir and his blood to race. He was certain they were again on the path that would lead to his destiny.
Not carry Groth,
the chieftain snarled at his warriors. He shook himself free from the Ungors. Unsteady on his legs, he pressed one hand to the wall to support himself. It had a strange clamminess about it. He drew another breath and detected the smell of mould. A pale scum of the growth covered everything. He sniffed at what had come off on his fingers. There was a necrotic quality about it that was far from his liking, and he tried to brush it off. Sorgas crept forwards and inspected the wall. His hand was wrapped in a bandage torn from his cloak, and he used this covering to dab at the mould. The shaman scowled at the pallid substance.
You must be careful what you touch from here, he warned. This is carrion rot.
He shifted his bray staff under his arm and used his claw to peel away the tainted bandage and toss it into the darkness. He held up the ugly stump of his finger so Groth could see.
The mould thrives on dead flesh, but if it gets into a wound, it is worse than deadly. It will bring a slow contamination that will turn the victim into one of the undead.
Vulak!
Groth snapped. The Ungor walked to him. When he was close, the chieftain took away his steel axe and held the hand which had touched the wall out to him.
Clean Groth hand,
he ordered. He looked at the burn spots that marred the fur on its back. He lifted his new axe and gave Vulak a further warning to be careful. Sorgas was still looking at the walls, surprised to see so much of the mould.
This should not be here, he muttered. In a cemetery or on a battlefield, perhaps, but to grow in such abundance on raw stone would need considerable magic to...
His eyes widened with alarm. He swung back to Groth.
In your vision, was there anything that made you think of a gateway or a window, some kind of opening between Gur and Shaiish?
Groth could only follow part of what Sorgas was saying. He did not know about gateways and openings, much less the intricacies of magic, but there was one thing that the shaman's questions did make him wonder about. How far could he trust what he had seen? The certainty that had been growing inside him had suffered drastically when the tree fiends attacked them. There had been no warning of them in the prophecy, and because of them, he had lost the axe he had seen himself carrying into the god beast's grave. If those things could change, what else could? Yet there were still signs that supported the veracity of Groth's vision.
Groth, see this tunnel, he told the shaman. Groth, see path to God Beast. Close. Soon.
Sorgas gave him a sharp look.
And what is it that you have not seen?
Groth bared his fangs. A thought had come to him when the tree fiends made the roots fall upon him. He had seen their magic before, when the war herd tried to claim their forest as a new hunting ground. He wondered if he had also seen that same magic at work when he was saved from being sacrificed. He stepped towards Sorgas and raised his axe.
Tree fiends track war herd. Maybe track Groth long. Maybe free Groth with tree magic.
Sorgas did not mistake the accusation. He backed away from Groth and shifted his bray staff back into his clawed hand. He held the other before him, displaying the missing finger.
I bit off my own finger to save you,
he protested.
If I wanted you dead, would I maim myself to help you?
Before Groth could make his mind up, Frang came loping out of the darkness to rejoin the beastkin. It was visibly excited, its fur bristling, and a low snarl rumbling from its throat. The beast hound turned and faced back the way it had come.
Tree fiends,
Groth growled. He looked at the walls, slick with the carrion rot mould.
Tree fiends hurt by fight. Much wounds.
The mould feeds on flesh, Sorgas reminded him. Their wooden bodies can offer nothing for the carrion rot.
Groth stamped his hoof against the floor. His idea had been to fight their pursuers here and use the mould to gain an advantage.
Go,
he snarled at the others.
Not fight here. Fight better place.
A kick of Groth's hoof sent Frang rushing ahead of them down the tunnel. He let the beast hound get a good distance away before he followed. The rest of the war herd came after, placing themselves between Groth and the tree fiends. Groth was certain his goal was close as they pushed deeper into the mountain. Every twist and turn revealed by Sorgas's light was familiar to him. He knew instantly which passageway to take. Their only hesitation was to call Frang back when the beast hound set out down the wrong corridor. Groth kept his senses keen for any sign the tree fiends were closing in, any stray sound or wayward scent that could warn him. He dreaded to see even the hint of a root splitting the rock. The tree fiends were at their most dangerous when they could use their magic to animate other plants. Now he knew that included tangles of roots underground, as well as cursed forests on the surface. While watching for anything that could help the tree fiends, Groth noticed that the thickness of the mould was becoming more pronounced. The carrion rot was taking on a translucent quality, casting its own ghostly shadow.
Sorgas, no light, he told the shaman.
When the spell faded, the orangish glow from the mould was still bright enough to see by.
Use mould glow,
Groth told the others.
Scent bad.
Togra said.
Dead smell.
The raider had an arrow drawn from his quiver and was ready to knock it to his bow. Vulak stood close to him, a sharp splinter from one of the fallen plinths gripped in his hands. Groth paused. He did not need to draw a breath to know what Togra was speaking of. There was a rankness to the air, not the kind of deathly odour from corpses. That, at least, would be a familiar scent. This was something else, an impression of stagnation, something locked away too long, not like spoiled fruit or rotten meat. It was a staleness that went far beyond putrefaction.
Frang!
Groth shouted. The beast hound's keen senses should have warned them of bad air. He intended to impress on the creature the hazards of laxity.
Frang does not sense this.
Sorgas told Groth as the beast hound came loping back.
It hasn't a brain big enough to know what is wrong?"
There was an excitement in the shaman's voice, a mix of dread and anticipation.
"There is a saturation of death ahead of us, a concentration of those dark energies that make the carrion rot thrive on bare stone."
He nodded his lupine head.
"Yes, I think it must be the god beast's tomb. We are close."
Groth coughed and tried to spit the taste of the air from his mouth.
"Tree fiends follow," he reminded the shaman. "Groth, take heart, take power. Fight tree fiends then."
Again, Sorgas nodded.
"It will all be for nothing if we are caught by our enemies."
The beastkin pressed on into the eerily glowing depths of Beastgrave. Sorgas thought the luminescence of the mould lent everything a decayed sheen. It was an effect that well suited the hideous tang in the air. He knew enough about the different winds of magic to recognize the baleful emanations of Shaiish. Whatever Groth had said or seen, he was convinced there was some kind of portal open to the haunted realm. Perhaps it was close, perhaps far, but the shaman was certain there was some connection. Near or distant, the dark magic was being pulled down into this tunnel and drawn onwards. The other beastkin advanced ahead of Sorgas. Certain he was unobserved, he brought the head of his bray staff scraping against one of the walls. It was fairly caked in mould. He was impressed by how much of the glowing encrustation he removed. He was even more impressed by what he found underneath. Groth had pressed onwards, thinking what lay under the mould was just the same rock as before. The herd chief was wrong. What Sorgas had exposed was a section of rock as smooth as plaster. Images were picked out on that surface, pictures of incalculable age. They were abominably suggestive of the insectile statues he had seen before. These were depicted carrying large reptiles to what must be a huge basin. The insects butchered these lizards in unspeakable fashion and filled the bowl with their dismembered bodies. Intrigued as much as he was disgusted, Sorgas swept the braystaff down another section, revealing another picture. There was a gargantuan creature sitting on the other side of the basin. It was a great black shape, shaggy and brutish, with long arms and massive jaws. It was plucking bits of the lizards from the bowl and devouring them. Even as a simple image, the shaman sensed the awesome power of the creature the insects were feeding. It was strange that only now did it occur to him that a god beast would certainly have its devoted worshippers.
"Sorgas, follow!"
Groth barked from further down the tunnel. Sorgas considered the image. Its presence here meant they were likely close to where the god beast was entombed. The long hunt was almost over. He would have to decide what to do about Groth. If not for the menace of the tree fiends pursuing them, he would make his move the instant they were in the crypt. Not knowing how far behind their hunters might be, put a different perspective on things. He might even have to let Groth claim the heart and be content to serve the new beast lord. Distasteful, but better than being torn to ribbons by tree fiends. There was a notable downward slope to the tunnel. The air, if anything, became still more rank. There was an increasing coldness to the atmosphere. To the others, these changes might be enigmatic, but Sorgas knew they were provoked by the accumulation of Shaiish. There was a big conglomeration of that deathly energy close. Frang howled in distress, the sound echoing down the tunnel. Sorgas hurried forward to see the beast hound cringing at Groth's feet. The herd chief was exultant, waving his arms at two colossal doors that closed the end of the tunnel. Each of the portals looked to be shaped from some dark and lustrous ore, banded with straps of metal. The combination must have weighed many tons, for each door was a dozen feet high and 8 feet wide.
"Here!"
Groth shouted to the Ungors.
"Here is what Groth see. Here is where Groth find destiny.
Sorgas was not so certain.
We must get past the doors first. Whoever put them here may have laid hexes and traps on them.
He set his staff so it pointed towards the obstruction and drew on his magic. There would be no time for subtlety with the tree fiends on their trail. He raised his hand to his mouth. Groth struck the shaman's hand away.
No need. Groth, see doors. Groth, see doors open.
Boldly, with arrogant surety, the chieftain strode forwards.
Traps! Hexes!
Sorgas called after the swaggering herd chief. Groth ignored him and kept going. The tunnel shook and rolled. Rocks and dirt pattered down from the roof. The floor jumped under Sorgas's feet and knocked him to the ground. Togra and Vulak shrieked in terror while Frang cowered down on its belly. Groth managed to keep standing and continued towards the doors. Sorgas was certain the chieftain's arrogance had triggered some spell or mechanism that would bring the whole mountain down around their heads. The thought of being squashed like a bug beneath an avalanche of rock rushed through his mind. He wailed to the dark gods to redeem him from his plight. Amazingly, the next few moments did not see the mountain falling down about Sorgas's horns. He watched in wonder as the huge doors parted before Groth's approach. Dust and dirt spilled down from the ancient portals as they moved. The creaking groan that sounded from them sliced through the air. A powerful wind rushed down the corridor, carrying with it a confusion of musty smells and a decayed reek. There was a sound, wavering between a strident hum and a soft whisper. Groth stood in the opening, his bestial figure framed by the green glow that shone from the place beyond the doors. The herd chief was exultant.
Groth, destiny! Here find god-beast power!
He gestured with his axe to his followers and motioned them to join him as he stepped through the doorway. Sorgas hurried after the chieftain, stumbling as the tunnel continued to shudder around them. Beyond the doors, the ground was firm, devoid of even a trace of the agitation that beset the corridor outside. The portals opened into a vast cavern, so tremendous in scope that the shaman was awed by the enormity. It seemed to stretch away to the very limits of sight, all illuminated by the glowing mold. Great spans of solid stone reared up to brace the roof, each one more bloated and misshapen with mineral incrustations than the other. Stalactites and stalagmites of every size jutted from the floor and ceiling like the teeth of Beastgrave itself, a gigantic maw that could never be filled. Lying amid the fields of mineral growths were colossal blocks of worked stone. Sorgas could not begin to conceive how such constructions could have been raised without the mightiest of sorceries. Their scale was cyclopean, and from a distance they seemed to be cut from individual slabs. From somewhere the notion came to him that maybe the blocks had not been cut at all, but had in some fantastical way been grown into their desired shapes and positions. The beastkin stalked deeper into the cavern. The Ungors warily inspected every shadow they passed, sharp with fear. Frang lingered back with the rest of them and refused to stray ahead as it had done before. For his part, Sorgas conjured wards to defend them against ancient curses and unquiet spirits. In his spellcraft, the shaman kept one eye on Groth. There was no hesitance about the herd chief. It was obvious from the way he marched through the cavern that he was following a path he had expected to find, the path foretold to him in his vision. The decayed smell grew stronger as the beastkin moved further, as did the sighing, humming sound. Sorgas felt dwarfed by the megalithic pillars they crawled across, the full enormity of the ruins blotted out by the eons of minerals that had seeped down. At times, the shaman could almost detect a faded glyph or image on the blocks, but they seemed to evaporate before his eyes when he tried to make any kind of closer study. The stink became so pungent it could almost be tasted. The sound became so powerful that Sorgaz felt it as a dull vibration in his bones. Groth became more eager than ever, striking out well ahead of them all. The shaman saw him clambering over a mound of rubble that reared up from the floor. The chieftain reached the top and threw his head back in a triumphal howl. The sight instilled courage in the Ungors and Frang. They dashed forwards to join Groth in his victory. Sorgas saw something else. There was a shape to the rubble, definition that had not been obliterated by the minerals that encased it. Because of the size, he wanted to reject the idea that had taken hold in his mind. When he scrambled forwards and climbed to the top, he did not continue onwards as the others had. Groth was leading them over a toppled column that lay deeper in the ruins. Sorgas turned to the wide hollow at the middle of the rubble. The bottom of the hollow was a jumble of debris, thick with the mineral build-up. Yet a few objects were clear enough for Sorgas to pick out, despite the patina that encrusted them. A clawed limb, a saurian skull. The hollow was filled with ancient bones. The rubble over which they had climbed was part of a huge basin, a bowl big enough to hold the carcass of a mammoth. Sorgas thought of the pictures on the wall and the hulking creature that had been receiving sacrifices in such a bowl. Sorgas scrambled away from the basin. His first instinct was to flee, to escape the dreadful implications. The impulse held him for only a moment before it was beaten into abeyance by his will. One great desire had kept Sorgas alive, given him a purpose when his mutations caused him to be cast out by his family and left alone in the forest. That was the obsession for power. Not power as crude chieftains like Groth reckon such things. The power Sorgas sought was that which was locked away inside all knowledge. To learn and understand a thing was to possess it always, be it the hidden ambition of a Gor warrior or the secret intonations of a spell. Once a thing was known, it became power. Even as his body urged him to run, Sorgas knew he could not. He had to know. Suspicion was not enough. He had to see and know. The state of the basin and its contents gave Sorgas reassurance. After the epochs of time needed